Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes.
And it's time for our parenting slot. Coleman Nocter is back with us again. Coleman, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Here's your first question. My two-year-old, when he is angry, and when he doesn't get what he wants, he hits, wants to grab, and he bites me. I can see in his eyes a look that he physically wants to hurt me. I have two other children that I've never experienced anything similar to this. I've no clue where he got this from or why he does this. Do you have any advice on how I can stop this? He acts like this to myself, my husband, and his five-year-old brother.
This type of behaviour is very common. He's only two. So most kind of that kind of aggression, if you can call it that, in toddlers comes from an inability to manage a kind of a sensory overload or their frustration. They just don't have the language to communicate. I think she's reading a little bit too much into it to say that he deliberately wants to hurt me. That suggests a degree of intent. I'm not so sure a two-year-old is all that aware of what they're doing. It's interesting, though, that tantrum behaviours, I was reading recently, even if in 5 out of 10 incidences they get what they want, it seems to be a worthwhile pursuit for small children. So if you're rewarding the tantrum or the misbehaviour, even in half the time, that, you know, so maybe it's only in public, it's enough to sustain that behaviour on an ongoing basis. But this little lad is only two. I would strongly think that as he learns a vocabulary and as he learns how to speak and communicate better, that those type of behaviours would subside themselves. The important thing in trying to manage it is just not to reinforce it for him. So he may, if he's getting attention from that and there's a long discussion after he, you know, the biting is, again, a lot of people get very anxious about a child who's biting. Most children grow out of that very quickly. They're in that kind of oral phase of development where everything is going into the mouth. So it's not, as we think about adults or older children, biting seems to have an extra kind of connotation to it. Whereas in small toddlers, it doesn't have that meaning. But I just wouldn't reinforce it. I'd kind of disattend to, ignore the stuff that they're requesting in that way. If there's a victim involved, lavish the kind of the care to the person who's perhaps injured in it. It's a very kind of simple way of giving that child a little bit. You're just introducing a moral compass. They're not in a position to even start to cognitively develop that what they're doing is that wrong at 2 years of age.
Yeah.
And I think we over and underestimate the ability of toddlers. You know, they're incredibly irrational bunch. You know, they can't find their shoes, but they can find that one bit of onion you left in their pasta. You know, there's a kind of, so you're trying to kind of work with a very unreasonable kind of population, if that makes sense. And in this case, I would really strongly recommend she doesn't read too much into this behaviour, that it's not too alarming, because that will make her more anxious, which will make the way in which she manages it all that more intense. I would try and dilute the intensity, diffuse it, and try and ignore it as much as possible. My strong feeling is that will subside.
Yeah, and it's not an uncommon question, certainly for this lot that we've got before about biting. Is he too young to learn that this isn't going to work?
No, because if he's not rewarded with the thing that there's obviously precursors to it. So if somebody has a toy that he wants, or if he wants something like some buttons or something like that, and he's doing this in order to achieve it, it's a learned behavior. And he's able to learn behavior that if I do this, this is the result, but not the conscience elements of it or the morality of it. So if you give in to every time he has a tantrum or bites or hits somebody and that gets what he wants, then of course he'll learn that that's the way to do it. So you're trying to disassociate the reward and the outcome from how he does it by not giving him what he wants when he does it.
My six-year-old daughter has recently developed two twitches. She started by turning her hands over and back many times throughout the day. We recently also developed shaking her. She recently developed shaking her head like she's trying to free her hair from her collar. She's a very happy child and is doing well at school. I've seen her teacher and she saw this and tied her hair up as she thought it was bothering her. How should we deal with this and will it pass?
I think the caller here is referring to twitches. I would refer to this as tics. And a tic is a brief kind of repetitive movement. It's involuntary that many children will experience it. It can happen in two ways. You can have vocal tics, which can be grunts or sniffs, oftentimes misinterpreted as a cold. And then you'd have motor movements. Normally the head and neck or twitching of facial movements. Like that girl, it looks like she's flicking back her hair. Yeah. That's a very common one. Tics in childhood are common. and I think we kind of miss them or misunderstand them. They can obviously become more complex if there's more muscle movement involved in the tick. But in general, a tick behavior will come. It may stay for a number of weeks, even months, and it will subside. I mean, a high percent. I would think there's something about 18% of children experience tick behaviors at some point in their lives. It tends to peak in between the ages of kind of 6 and 8, and usually by 10, 12, it tends to reside. If it's an infrequent kind of occurrence that's happening in an on and off, maybe, and it isn't prolonged, it isn't troublesome, it generally is something that you can kind of just allow to happen. But I think it's really important, and I've spoken to a lot of young people who experience tics more severe than this caller's suggestion, but a tick, to understand it from the person who suffers it, I remember a young boy explaining to me, it's like a real bad itch. So you can kind of, you can, in school there's a lot of you know, you're trying to hold off doing it in front of your peers, but a lot of children would describe going into the bathroom and ticking feverishly for 5 or 6 minutes and then coming back out, because there's a release from the feeling of having to tick. And so although they're involuntary, they're, you can suppress them to a certain extent, but it is, it's one of those fascinating conditions because we don't know how to test for it. We don't know neurologically really what it's about.
We have no idea what causes it,
What we do know is that fatigue and tiredness makes it worse. It can sometimes exacerbate during stress. It's commonly can be seen with kids who may have obsessive compulsive type behaviours as well. But it's again, to the caller, I wouldn't get concerned about it. It's more than likely something that this child will grow out of. It proceeding into teen and adult years would be unusual. And kind of tick behaviours are more commonly seen in smaller children and decrease as we get older. But I would have some sympathy for children who have tick disorders or having experience of tics, because it can be embarrassing, they're very self-conscious of it, and it can oftentimes have more of an impact on their self-esteem if it's, you know, if they're getting teased about it, or if it's something that they're kind of, I suppose, being notified or kind of isolated because of that. And you know, peers can be mean and they're going, why do you keep moving your head like that, and you know, and you get all this kind of slagging and stuff like that. And I think that's the bit to protect her from this, is that this is, it'll pass, it's just something that she does. But it's important to say that she's not consciously doing this, this isn't a voluntary thing that she's just doing to annoy people, and it's not a habit. A tick can, as I said, can be involuntary, although it can be suppressed, it is involuntary, and it's an uncomfortable experience for children to have. But as I said, between 80 and 90% of them pass without any sort of incident.
And I suppose if they see a parent perhaps wincing every time they see the tick, or, you know, freaking out a little bit, that's not going to help.
No, because it's going to make them more self-conscious, which rises their stress, which increases the likelihood of the tick behaviours getting worse. So again, we associate it with an emotional disorder because emotional stress and things make it worse. But you know, that kind of the mind-body connection is incredibly strong. And I would also say to young people, you know, that connection between embarrassment and blushing, you know, embarrassment is an emotion, yet we show it on our face, you know, so that idea that our emotions connect with how we feel in these kind of somatic features are really important. So I would try and diffuse it, dilute it, keep an eye on it, of course, but just I would try and make the child feel as normal as possible, and trying to say that you understand it, and that in most cases this will pass and it'll be fine. And I think she needs to hear that too.
I have a 6-year-old boy who constantly wets himself during the night, but never during the daytime. He's been having these accidents for years. I've tried picking him up at 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning, reducing fluid intake, etc., but still happens 5 times a week. Any thoughts?
Yeah, 5 times a week's a lot.
Yeah.
In terms of, there's kind of what we call primary enuresis, which is a case where the child has never trained and just it takes a long time, and they wet during the night all the way through. Secondary enuresis is a child who has trained and manages it and then regresses to doing that later on. Now, in both instances, you want to kind of rule out if there's a kind of a physiological reason for it. And if it's going on this long, it's unlikely to be a urinary tract infection or something like that that's causing them to do it. There's three factors in bedwetting. One is a child who's a deep sleeper, one who has a kind of overactive bladder, and some and another child who just doesn't have the control response at night when they're not terribly conscious. There's lots of research that suggests that kind of depriving the child of liquids is not necessarily the best way to go about it. A child needs a minimum of a litre and a half of liquids a day, so you need to make sure that they're getting getting enough of that, you know, to dehydrate the child on the basis of this. But some common recommendations is that they have earlier in the day, they have about 50% of their fluids before lunchtime and then stagger it as they go. The other thing is, I suppose if this is getting it 5 times a day, this is going to impact on his, again, his self-esteem and how he feels about himself. Is he at an age where he's probably going to sleep over soon, things like that? It becomes much more of a complex issue. What we do, and what I would reassure this parent, is an average of about 2.5% of adults bedwet as adults. So he will more than likely 98% of getting better. Now, what I would say to the most common mistake that people make is they try and motivate a child by using the dry night as the motivator. And that's actually not fair, because the child can't control what they do at night when they're unconscious.
Yeah.
So the motivational kind of, whether it's star charts or trying to reinforce the behavior, is if they go through the routine before bed by, you know, using the bathroom, not drinking things too late at night, you know, and they're doing their part on what they can do to improve the process.
Yeah.
That's what you reward, not the dry night. If it was to persist, I mean, there's anuretic alarm systems. I haven't personally used those, but I've heard of parents who have used it, which is a kind of sensory alarm that fits when it feels the urine coming. It goes off and it triggers the child to get into responding to when they feel that they're going to wet, that they can get it. Reports would suggest there's kind of high rates of success with that. I just think I would be concerned about the 5 nights a week. I'm not concerned that he's that old or anything like that, but I just think for him it must be fairly demoralising to wake up 5 mornings out of 7 and kind of feeling, oh no,
I've done
it again. And I just worry for his own self-worth and value, and I would try and bolster that as much as possible and kind of not let this define him, really. I try those things and see how it goes, but it's not something I would let persist too long without trying to get some other help with it.
Yeah.
Because I would just wonder about what it's doing for him.
Dimpton says, at 2 to 3 years old, my son bit his cousin and made her cry. I bit him immediately and said, doesn't that hurt? And he never bit again. Then we were queuing for face painting and he started to scream and throw a tantrum. I left and put him in the car and took him home. That was his one and only tantrum, says Dimna.
Yeah, I'm not in favour of the biting children back method. It's some people will say that it works. I just think that's kind of, I don't use the same matching violence with violence, but you're kind of, you know.
Will the child necessarily make that connection anyway?
It depends on the age of the child. I doubt it. I mean, in terms of when the child is after biting someone, they're highly distressed, and getting bitten by somebody else is going to make them more distressed in that moment. The issue where she was going to the face painting, he had the tantrum and she left, and that was a tantrum that didn't recur. I would be a favour of that. I would think, in terms of if you're going somewhere and a child is misbehaving and they're tantruming, and say you're going to the park, missing out on one day in the park to learn a lesson is not necessarily the worst thing in the world for the child to learn. You know, I think sometimes we kind of say, well, we're halfway there, we'll just keep going, and the child tantrums and the reward is given regardless. I think sometimes an investment in kind of learning a lesson in that way can disassociate that a tantrum achieves what I want, because sometimes if a tantrum doesn't, then the child learns to integrate that into their conscience and their decision making, you know. But I would think, from the point of view of, I would struggle to condone biting back, I think.
Yeah. Somebody wants to know, what's the difference between a tic and a mannerism?
That's an interesting question. I suppose a mannerism is something that's habitual, that's something that if we're made conscious of, we can stop.
But it's not necessarily a bad thing,
mannerism. No, not necessarily at all.
Yeah. But smoking a pipe is a mannerism, you could argue.
True. But I think a tic tends to be more involuntary. A tic is a very noticeable movement. It's quite jerky if you've seen it in real life. And I suppose what I would say about kind of children who have tics, not all children develop Tourette's syndrome, and I think that's an unusual assumption, that if a child starts to have tics, then they'll develop Tourette's syndrome. And Tourette's syndrome, unfortunately, has been something that's been really poorly portrayed across a lot of media in terms of it's something humorous and all that sort of stuff. For people who suffer from it, and young people who suffer from it, it's a fairly torturous and persecutory experience, actually.
Yeah.
It's not really any laughing matter. But from the point of view of a tic, if you see it in real life, it seems quite different to a mannerism, which might seem a bit more natural.
I think you'll you'd know it when you see it. Fair few people got in contact saying that they've used those bed alarms, and it's uniformly positive, certainly from the people who've used them, that they have worked. And Trina says that you can, that some public health centres will loan them out. So that would be kind of useful to save you the excitement. Christian also wonders, is the Five Nights wedding our school nights?
That's interesting. I thought about that myself. Yeah. Again, you're linking that with any bedwetting situation, you're looking for stressors. You know, especially a child who has trained and is now wetting again, you're looking for anything in their environment or in their life. Is there a bullying incident going on? Mm. Is there something that's troubling them at nighttime? And is the Five Nights a school night would be an interesting question to ask. I didn't pick that up. I would have thought that would be a pattern that a parent might notice and might point out in the call, but yeah, it's a very useful question.
Yeah. Texter says, my son had some very bad head and hand tics for about 3 years from the ages of 7 to 10, and they just went, thankfully, which as Coleman was saying, that's the usual experience. Now, next question is this for Coleman Nocter. My 14-year-old daughter has started stealing items from friends and family and then lies when confronted. How should we deal with getting her to stop this?
This is common in terms of young people stealing, and it usually is limited to the family home. Oftentimes, stealing from parents. I mean, I suppose for me, it's trying to explore why she's doing that. And there are many theories as to why people steal. First, you want to eliminate that she's not being bullied and being kind of forced to pay people, or that's and that is a common enough thing, that there's, you know, you're stealing to kind of fit in with a crew, or that, you know, there's other people's lifestyles and are seem to be a bit more exuberant than yours, and you're trying to keep up with, and that would normally be just stealing money from a parent's purse or whatever the case may be. And you're looking for an explanation, not an excuse. So you're trying to explore what it is, what's the motivation behind why she feels she needs to take this. That's not to absolve that this is a sanctionable offence, because she needs to obviously learn that stealing is wrong. And it's quite a different, to a 14-year-old, she's past the age of reason. So she does know what she's doing is, you know, culpable, and that there's, and, you know, explaining to a child that stealing can lead to a habit that can, you know, extend outside the home, and there's obviously criminal and complications that can come with that too. So I would just try and rule out those things, but I would kind of go back to basics on this one. I think the sanction around that she tries to replenish whatever she has stolen through, whether it's jobs or whatever it might be, that there's some kind of consequence for what she's doing. Once your explanation or her explanation doesn't seem to be that she's trying to feed something. Another thing, and listeners might think I'm being exaggerated on this, but be careful it's not there to feed a habit, and whether that's smoking or I mean, you know, we would see young people quite not that much older than 14 who would, you know, be taking maybe substances and things like that do not come cheap, and in order to feed that, it sometimes can start out as kind of stealing from family and friends and things like that, which again, it sounds quite sinister, but it's worth exploring, you know, it's worth looking at as well. But again, it's just trying to, you're trying to create a moral compass that this kid knows that this isn't something that she can continue to do, that there are ramifications for it, and that you're trying to teach her a life lesson here, that, you know, by having to replace what she's stolen, or, you know, return what she has stolen, or whatever it might be, that you're trying to, you know, get her to learn that that's to try and stop the habit, I guess, in that sense.
Yeah.
I don't know whether there's a real link between some of these kind of any mental health difficulty that would suggest that stealing would be part of that process. I mean, a lot of people will say that they have resentful, you know, kids who steal would say they resent their parents, or they favour other children over me, and it's a kind of a, but again, these are kind of explanations for that behaviour rather than excusing it. And I think that's the most important thing that she can take away from it, is that this is something that can continue and needs to stop, and she needs to manage it. But I would do that calmly, and not in the case of anger or, you know, but one thing I would always warn people, who, you know, the label of a thief is something that can kind of stick with you. If you are going investigating something, make sure you have your facts straight and there's no doubt that this is what
child
happened, has done.
Yes.
Because I've had young people come to me before and say, well, people think I steal anyway, so I might as well do it. And there's a kind of a sense of I get in trouble for loads of stuff anyway, so this is just another thing. Mm. And, you know, it does kind of, it damages that process of that conversation if you're blaming them in the wrong, because it just makes them feel more kind of isolated and picked on, which can sometimes fuel that behaviour and the resentment that they may feel. So,
And it's items she's stealing, not cash.
That's unusual.
That's the puzzling aspect to it. Yes.
I mean, there is gratification from getting away with things that, you know, and it was interesting. I was talking to someone recently and they were saying about the hit that gamblers get is not so much that of what I could have won, but also what I could have lost. So there's a kick with getting away with, my God, I could have lost €1,000 there, but I didn't. As opposed to, you know, if we're not in that mindset, we oftentimes think it's just about winnings, but actually there's a kick from getting away with not having been caught. And that's, you know, in teenage experimentation, that's something that they may be playing around with or toying around with, that kind of gratification of being able to do things undetected. And, you know, I don't want to normalize it, but there's a lot of children who will experiment with kind of stealing stuff. And again, what I'd say is the time has to match the crime. There's a difference between taking, you know, a fun-size Snickers from the cupboard and taking 50 quid from your dad's wallet.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think you need to kind of be sure about that too.
A 14-year-old would know the difference between those two things. Should we try and stop our 3.5-year-old sucking his finger? If so, any suggestions how to go about it?
Yeah, this is a common one again. I mean, a lot of people worry about the thumb sucking or finger sucking is less common, but it's obviously there's worries about speech development, there's worries about dental complications, all that sort of stuff. The reason children thumb suck is that it's a soothing mechanism that makes them feel better, it makes them feel more secure, and it's quite an effective one. So you're hoping that over time they'll learn other mechanisms to self-soothe other than doing that. What we do know is that prohibition and giving out to them and getting on their case doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because you can't remove their thumb. You can't take it from them. So
yes.
It's really hard. You need to get them to volunteer to not suck their thumb anymore, suck their fingers anymore. That's usually done in a smaller child by catching them when they're not doing it and saying, you know, I've seen you for the last 2 hours there and you haven't been sucking your thumb. That's really good. You must be getting you're going to be a big boy now. Mm. You're kind of trying to sell the idea that non-thumb suckers are cool, if that makes sense. And trying to, you know, lavish the praise on them when they're not doing it rather than getting on their case when they don't do it. Another thing that children really gets on their goat if they're picked on that in public. Really don't like that very much. So, you know, I try and do that. You know, even if you're trying to encourage them to just limit it to bedtimes and get used to not doing it during the day, it is a habit. It is one of those things that just becomes habitual. But I guess there's lots of things I've heard coming on the market, things you can put on their fingers that makes it taste bad and all that sort of stuff.
Those things have been around for years.
Don't engage in any of that stuff. The child has to give it up of their own accord or else it's not going to be a meaningful termination of that behaviour. But just praise them and try and encourage them to do something different. But I wouldn't panic about it.
I have a 5.5-year-old, says this texter, a daughter who has never been dry at night. She wears pull-ups but doesn't seem bothered. She's been prescribed medication to prevent wetting herself. Does Coleman think medication is a good option to treat bedwetting?
It is an option. I guess you're looking, and but when I was saying about the research about the alarms, the research would prove that they're as effective as the medication. Obviously, if you can try with a non-chemical formula first, that might work, then I would suggest that. But in cases where it is ongoing and it is that nocturnal enuresis is having an effect on the family and the child's behaviour, anything that will help is worth considering, and medication is one of those options.
My sister used to have a tic. Growing up, any time my sister would get excited, she would kind of flap her hands. As a family, we just ignored it. By the age of 10, she pretty much stopped. She's nearly 30 now, and still you sometimes see her hands just about to go. It's no big deal, really. That's interesting, isn't it?
That
kind of probably traces of it still remain there.
Perhaps, And again, it's important to say in tic behaviours, they may well return after a year of absence for a transient period of time and pass again. It's something that children do dip back into. Hand flapping is a little bit different to tics. That's another mannerism that, you know, is associated with kind of other complications like autism and things like that, which is different. But not every kid that hand flaps is has autism, obviously. Yes, I'm going to make that point clear. Yeah. But it is a little slightly different. But children do dip back into tic behaviours during times of stress and may actually grow out of it transitory and dip back in over a number of years, and it's not problematic.
Yeah. Listen in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on Moncrief for more parenting advice from David Carey.